Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
We overlooked a major group of fish on our whole like list of top five stuff.
Yeah, these are fish we've talked about a lot, but never specifically.
Right. So, you know, I think we kind of need to do that. But before we do,
we have to do our shameless plug. First of all, I think for this one, we can plug that we're going to be at the convention next month, and we're going to be bringing stuff to sell there too.
Yes.
So if you don't want to pay for shipping, I've already got a ton of plants set aside to bring to the, I keep forgetting the actual official name
it's
of it.
The Two in the Zoo.
Two in the Zoo. It's the combined ALA AKA convention.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
So whoever's going to that there, please come and visit us. Otherwise, if you can't make it, go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com and we've got live plants there. We've got merch designed by Ben and myself, and we've got the aquarium goods we're talking about on the podcast.
And we have stickers.
Stickers. Yes. We all love stickers.
And merch. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
One other order of business. Well, business, fun stuff. We have to do a shout out to, I'm going to mess your name up. Ronald Moyles. I'm probably spelling that name wrong. But yes, Ronald brought us our drinks for the evening. So he brought us a bottle of Ironfish and he brought us some dragon's milk.
We like anyone who buys us booze.
Yeah, but I mean, that's very cool. Yes, I really appreciate that. So thank you very much, Ronald. We are thoroughly enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And
cheers.
I mean, it's dragon's milk, so it should make for an interesting podcast, right?
Yeah, he's trying to get us drunk.
So cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Hopefully you picked up the fact that we clinked.
Mm-hmm. Clink.
So, Amy, believe it or not, I'm going to start with an honorable mention.
All right.
Right.
I like this. We're breaking form.
We're breaking
form. It's going to throw me off for the next hour, but I'll live.
I know. It's not going to be my official one. So you're going to do your official start.
Okay. Okay. Right? As long as I still get to start officially.
Yeah, exactly. So, and even before we like go into some of the other details of exactly what defines a carison, because that's what we're doing today is our top five carousins. Before we go into that, I'm going to do this honorable mention. And this honorable mention is to the black skirt tetra.
This is where Ben gets to eat his words a little bit, maybe?
You know, the reason that I'm doing this is, like, what is one of my top five fish? It's a fish that somebody else loves and is willing to come forward and defend. So on our podcast listener page, there were a couple of people that, one in particular, who had this really well-written essay defending the black skirt tetra. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it makes me tempted to bring some in. So I needed to bring that up as the honorable mention. And I have to say thank you to the honorable mention and thank you to all who defended it against me.
I think that was our most controversial opinion ever.
I thought it was great. Yep.
It was really good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It did sound like, and I'm pretty sure this came out on our Watercolors podcast listeners page. I don't think anybody was genuinely mad, right? I think it was like, hey, no, I like this fish and this is why. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. So I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything on my notes here. Yeah, so there we go. So there's a shout out to the lowly black skirt tetra and all of those who love that black skirt tetra for their own very good reasons.
It's just our reminder that the best fish is the one you love.
Yep. You betcha. So there.
All right.
But before we really go in, we should probably talk about what a carousin is.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
They're just tetras, right?
Right. Yeah. It's just tetras.
They're kind of hard to define because, like, I mean, are we talking carasiformes or carasinidae? And then there's just the problem of carasiformes and carasinidae were actually for a long time like waste bin taxa. And so as I was doing research for this podcast, I will be honest, I don't have a good definition for you because one of the things that was really strange was trying to read up on like some of the relationships between each other. And the answer to most of it is, no one knows.
Yeah. The number of subfamilies alone just really muddies the waters.
Yeah.
I admittedly ran into, you know, when I was trying to come up with, okay, here's my top five list, right? And I had to look up a fish to make sure it was definitely a kerosene. And it said, what is a kerosene? And it talked about, well, it's Carissidae, or Caridae?
It's
the family Caridae.
Right? Yeah, Carissinidae.
Carissinidae, and their allies. And I went, oh, wait, but what's defined as an ally if we're talking about kerosenes? Carissiformes is the order, and all of the fish on my list are at least in the order Carissiformes. They're not necessarily in the family Carissidae.
Mm.
So I had to specifically define that. Is there something that notably differentiates Carissiformes from Cyprinids?
Yes, I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head.
Okay. So that'd be Carissidae versus Cyprinidae, but Cyprinidae is not in Carissiformes, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So as long as it's in a completely different order, we're good.
Yep.
All right. That works.
It's like, you know, if it's in South America, it's a little more likely to be a kerosene. If it's in Asia, it's a little more likely to be a Cyprinid. If it's in Africa,
Either way. Good luck.
You know, but you still can't judge based off of that. Well, I tried to go, you know, we've talked about so many kerosenes, and we've all been on record with some of our favorite tetras already. But this is such a deep bench that, okay, my top five kerosenes, there's 50 of them, right?
It's true.
So I tried to choose some stuff that we haven't really talked about that much before that I still really love. But I got to start with what I think is the most classic fish on my list and the most useful to the most amount of people, Ember Tetra.
Nice. I thought you were going to take a different one off my list, but you took that one off my list.
Nope. I think this is my most predictable one, actually.
Really? Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ember Tetra was definitely on my list as well.
Hypha cebraicon amandae.
Yes.
And I found some fun trivia on this one.
Oh, cool.
Because Amanda, as in amandae, who it's named after, is, what is his name? Hilo Blair's mom, as in Hemigrammis blairi, the rummy-nosed tetra.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, so he has discovered a ton of fish and has had them named after him. Named but he did the initial collection of ember tetras.
Also called the dwarf red tetra and the fire tetra.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we call it Hephaesobrachon amandae.
Yeah, the combination of that intense solid color and the size makes them such a great fish for so many tanks.
We love our little nano fish around here.
Mm-hmm. Peaceful, keep to themselves, but they're not as fragile as some of the other tiny fish. Just kind of a win all around to me.
I feel like this isn't a fish that you can just, you know, like as hardy and versatile as, say, a black skirt tetra,
mm-hmm.
where you could put that in just about any water. I think with the ember tetra, our Michigan tap water is fine, but you don't want to put other things in the water that are going to harden it. And maybe a little, you know, a little driftwood in there wouldn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Keep like Texas Holy Rock or Lace Rock or things like that out of the tank. Use more inert rocks and a dirt substrate for a fish like this. But other than that, pretty darn hardy little fish.
Yeah, especially for their size. And they still have that like tetra profile, mm-hmm. which is a lot of the fun to me.
But a good solid color.
Yeah.
Pretty easy breeder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Typical egg scatterer, so that you might have babies show up in a densely planted aquarium. And certainly if you put a whole bunch of them in a densely planted aquarium and then took them out a little while later, babies would be pretty likely to show up.
Yeah, especially with how small they are. They're not as big of egg predators as some of the other
right.
fish that you might try to do that with.
They're also a great candidate for the strategy of having a community tank and then a 5-gallon that you pull pairs out and throw them in for a weekend, see what happens.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about him. I think most people who are listening to this probably already know him and love him as much as we do.
So my first pick is going to be Hyphocebrichon cyanotaniata.
Ooh, okay. That was going to be one of my top five, but good thing I have 9.
You have 9?
Yeah.
So that's the lapis tetra.
Oh, yeah.
This is one that kind of blows me out of the water a little bit because, like, no one knows about them, no one cares about them, and they are one of the drop-dead most gorgeous fish I've ever seen. They just throw absurd colors.
It's a double take fish. You yeah. walk by and you've got to walk back.
The males have like almost a true rainbow. It's kind of unreal.
It's pretty epic.
And they take a while to settle in. So they're not a fish that photographs well. They're not a fish that, like, I have never seen a photo of them that I thought, oh, wow, that makes me want that fish. And it wasn't until we had some sitting around here for a few months that I started being like, holy crap, these things are really cool.
Yeah. Pictures not only don't do them justice, they don't even show the colors that they actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of water are they found in?
They tend to be a little bit more softer water, but they seem to do really fine in our tap water here. They colored up fully in it anyways.
And they were showing spawning behaviors. We never got babies out of them, but those males were displaying and trying to woo the females pretty actively.
That's showing the right signs. All of these tetras, I should say all, most of these tetras are going to breed almost every night. Usually right about when the lights go off, they're going to do some egg scattering or some egg depositing, depending on what they prefer. And these should be no different in the right circumstances. It's whether or not the fry are going to have the opportunity to hatch and if they're going to grow up or not.
Yeah, these were doing that really interesting tetra behavior where they, like, the males will kind of hang out under a leaf and try and lure the females in versus, like, that just kind of mass spawning thing. It was really fun to watch.
Pretty fun.
And then they also did, like, where the sun started to go down and they would all just start, like, darting back and forth together, kind of like you think of tangs doing or something. Really cool. Like,
are they sexually dimorphic?
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. The males are very differently colored than the females.
It's like a yellow body color with a really noticeable blue sheen on top and a red, bright red tail, but with like a really thick black stripe going through the whole body. So they got that color and contrast thing that's really appealing.
Yeah.
They're gorgeous. It's a good choice. I like it. Oh, which one should be my first one? You know, I'm gonna go with the classic of classics, because I think that because of its conservation status and its sustainability in the hobby, and its sustainability as a wild-caught fish in the hobby, it just has to be mentioned today. And I think that its colors are unmatched. I'm not saying there aren't fish that are as good as this, but I don't think there's any kerosene that's better.
Or comparable. You can't say this one and another one. Either way, yeah. Even its relatives.
Yeah, I agree. So, of course, I'm talking about cardinal tetras.
Yeah.
Parachirodon axelrodi. The reason I talk about sustainability with cardinal tetras is because in the wild, they are what would be considered a seasonal fish. In other words, they live their entire lifespan in one season. Now, in aquariums, of course, we know we can get 4 or 5, sometimes even 6 or 7 years out of cardinal tetras as long as they don't dry up like they do in the Amazon. But that means that they reproduce like crazy enough to replace themselves every single year. So if some of the adults get taken out, it's not going to have a major effect or any effect on the population. And then those people that do it make a really good living harvesting something sustainable and then not harvesting other things because they're making their money on their cardinal tetras. On top of that, cardinal tetras like good clean water and good healthy ecosystems. So those people that rely on those cardinal tetras are going to help make sure that that ecosystem stays good and healthy. So that makes cardinal tetras, to me, one of the poster fish for sustainability in this hobby, which is obviously a message we try very hard to get across.
Yeah.
Yeah, an icon for all reasons. Right.
It's one of the fish that you can say indubitably that wild-caught ones are better than captive-raised ones.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, hardier, not just
remarkably hardier. Right?
Not just we feel good about getting the wild caught ones, but hardiness is amazing on these. They do like it a little bit warmer, get it up into close to 80. Going hotter than that is just fine, but right around 78 to 80 degrees is a great temperature for cardinal tetras. They are found throughout the Amazon River system, other than some of the upper regions where the water can get a little cooler, where the neon tetras are going to be found.
Yeah. They're most common in the Rio Negro and the Orinoco. Yeah.
What do you guys say for tank size for cardinal tetras? That's a little controversial, actually.
It is, but I think that done right, I would be just fine putting half a dozen in a 10-gallon tank.
Yeah.
I would not argue with somebody doing that.
No, I wouldn't argue, but I would say, why didn't you just do neon tetras? To me, cardinals, you get them so that they can school.
They're much cooler when they're in a massive group. Massive groups of these fish are definitely amazing.
Yeah, when people ask me, like, how many should I get minimum, I tell people, well, I recommend people buy them by the dozen, because the last time I bought a group for myself, I bought 30. You know?
And what size tank?
It was a 30.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect.
That, like, to me is, I wouldn't bother with less than that. Like, 30 and a 30 is the place to start.
Yeah.
But keeping a few in a 10, they're going to do just fine. And they probably won't even show any signs of stress.
No.
It's just not as cool.
I agree. Regular good old-fashioned flake food is a great food for these fish.
Mm-hmm.
Breeding them in captivity is actually kind of challenging on the hobbyist.
At least in America.
Yeah.
Those darn Czech breeders.
Yeah, they're doing it just fine. The Keeping Fish Simple guy, what's that?
He's Australian, yeah.
He's Australian.
Yeah.
What is his... Is it Keeping Fish Simple?
Yes.
Or Simple Fish Keeping. No, it's Keeping Fish Simple.
Keeping Fish Simple.
He has a great little video series on how he successfully bred cardinal tetras and got actually great results and got a lot of them. I want to try that sometime. I've never tried it with cardinal tetras, but...
Is that the, like the rain bucket thing that some people do?
He did it in styrofoam coolers, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, so not unlike the rain bucket thing.
Yeah, like it's where basically you start in one bucket and like transfer on as you go type of thing.
Yeah, you fill a bucket with rainwater and oak leaves. Not fill it with oak leaves, but put oak leaves in it and rainwater. And I think they're doing it with just like an air stone, not even a filter. And then fill that up, keep it like that for a few days, and then fill up another one. Once that one's up and running, then move the tetra. I'm not doing this quite right, right? But you get
it's
the idea.
It's the general idea.
You get five of them going, and you transfer the tetras into each one, and then babies should show up.
Sweet.
Yeah. Had to go with cardinal tetras. Had to mention them. Had to talk about them because they're amazing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with my next one, just kind of a little bit more of an oddball tetra. It's the only fish in its genus. I'm talking about the crystal tetra.
Oh, excellent.
Which is Protochirodon pie. And I have a fun fact about this one, too. The name pie comes from the weird shape of its swim bladder. There are a couple of odd modifications to the swim bladder that cause it to be shaped like pie.
Funky.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody wants glass tetras or glass catfish, and I can't say you shouldn't have that. But like if you've got a 20 gallon and you want a clear, weird looking fish, this is the one.
They're clear and weird looking, but there's still something exceptionally elegant to the look of these fish.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of like a toned down diamond tetra, like where it's a little classier.
Classy. I'm glad you went with classy. As soon as you said toned down, to me that said not quite as cool. And no, classier is, mm-hmm. It's not flashy and trashy. It's classy and... I don't know. I can't come up with a word that rhymes with all those words I just came up with.
Classy and sassy.
Classy and sassy. There you go. Thanks, Charles.
But not too sassy, I
not
promise.
Too sassy, right.
They're not going to be super aggressive. These are really cool fish. They're going to behave pretty much like most of the hythysobrichons you're familiar with, but they are completely different, honestly.
That's a fish that I've seen used in some of the really high-end crazy aquascapes.
Mm.
And it's, you know, in those aquascapes, you don't want a fish that's going to detract from the scape itself, but that can still stand alone. And I think this fish hits that mark fantastically.
Yeah, it's when you don't really need to be heavy-handed with the color. You're just looking for that perfect accent, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think they do it perfectly. Do you know where they're from? I mean, it was South America, but...
I didn't write it down. Okay. but... Yeah, South America. It wasn't somewhere unusual. It was like, you know, one of the main rivers that I would think of.
Okay.
They stay pretty small too, like a little over an inch at the most. So it's a good one for a lot of different tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while under the Twin Star lights, the iridescence on their sheen just explodes in a beautiful rainbow of colors.
You get that like prism effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yep. I like those guys.
Charles?
Nemetabrichon palmeri.
Dang it. Keep taking stuff off my list.
This one makes the list for me because it's come up many times on the podcast, but I love a good purple and it's really hard to find in freshwater. Mm-hmm. And the male palmeri, they definitely have a distinct iridescent purple.
Definitely.
They also have a lot of other things going for them. They just got a weird shape. They've got a strange sort of sexual dimorphism, not just in that like the males are more colorful, but they have different eye colors. Mm-hmm. So the males have blue eyes and the females have green eyes. So even very young, you can sex them pretty readily. And as they get older, the males get that nice trident tail that makes them a really easy spawn because, you know, when you can get them in the store and they're not sexually mature, but you can sex them out, get a pair, bring them home, breed them, bap them, whatever you want to do with them. And then, you know, do the churn and burn of breeding and raising and water changes and feeding and keep going. And there you go. Bing, bang, boom. You've got 20 of them. You can put them in your display.
Yeah. Emperor Tetris definitely made my list. There was some confusion on some forum sites about sexing Emperor Tetris. And as adults, they're really easy because the males get that trident tail and the females don't. Or at least not quite as exaggerated as the males do. But there are a bunch of people that said, no, the males have red eyes and the females have blue eyes, right? And that's actually a different species. It's the genus has two species in it. And the ones with the red eyes are, I have it written down, Lacordiae. Mm-hmm. Nematobrichon Lacordiae. This is Emperor Tetras and the Red Eye Emperor Tetra is the other name for this one. As I was looking at the pictures of both of these fish, the males were easy to tell apart because of the red eyes. And there's a little bit of a slightly different coloration in the lighter portions of the red eye emperor tetra as opposed to the standard emperor tetra. But I think if you got those females mixed up,
you're screwed.
Yeah. They are endemic to the San Juan and Atrato River basins in Colombia. So only found in Colombia, which I found rather interesting. I thought some of those would have ended up further downstream, but they don't. Not very picky, easy to breed.
Yeah, they're an easy fish.
They look way fancier than they are.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't ship well sometimes, though.
No, that's true. So getting some local ones or some established ones is there's definitely some value in that.
Yeah.
But I guarantee there's someone in your club breeding them.
Yeah, that's probably true. We had a display tank years back and we would have babies just show up. And it was a very densely planted tank. And we would have babies just show up in that tank. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Charles, that's such an excellent choice. It was on my list too. And if you guys take one more of mine, I'm going to have to switch over to alternates here.
I didn't put it because I knew one of you would get it.
Yeah. Good call. I got to talk about jelly bean tetras.
Mm. Good choice.
Yeah. What you noticed at the beginning of this, when we were talking about differentiating carassins, and I made it clear that we were going to go up to the order level, not the family level. So not the family Carassidae, which some people argue that that's what carassins are in the family Carassidae. And Seriously Fish talks about the Carassidae and their allies. And jellybean tetras are not in the family Carassidae, as most African tetras are not in the family Carassidae.
Interesting.
They're an elistid or family elistidae. So Congo tetras and all of those funky Congo tetras, that's all a different family than the African ones, which kind of makes sense that, you know, finding tetras on both continents, okay, there's something to that. But have down to the family level on both continents, that would be a little bit surprising.
Yeah. You know, it's been a couple 10 million years.
Yeah. There's going to be some differentiation.
Just
there.
A bit. But
admittedly, the main reason that I put these on my list is because you find them in the same waters as clown killies.
Yeah.
So
they're a great combo with them too.
Yeah, absolutely. They should be, with the white water conditions, they should be fairly easy to breed doing some of the tetra breeding techniques that we talked about. I think this is a fish that you do want to mess with the water a little bit to get them to breed. We are keeping them in our tap water and they are looking absolutely fantastic. Not putting anything that's going to harden the water in the tank. So no Texas holy rock and no lace rock. I think Sirius stone doesn't quite give off enough to be problematic for a fish like this, as long as there's a dirt substrate or a good planet aquarium with some driftwood in it. But that might be some risk there.
From what I know about Sirius stone, it's like the stone itself doesn't really leach all that much. It's if you have like a super veiny stone, then that part of it is more likely to leach into the water.
Oh, so the part that makes it cooler looking?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, pretty much sums it up, right?
Like, but a few veins isn't going to do that. It's okay. The like super veiny. But as far as I know, it's not, you know, like it and lace rock are pretty similar compositions, but lace rock is more likely to dissolve and leach because of it's less dense or something like that.
Lace rock is like solid calcium carbonate.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think Sirius stone is solid calcium carbonate, is it?
They're both limestone, I think.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then.
As far as I know, yeah. Someone can correct me if they know about rocks. Yeah, I don't know that much about rocks.
Geologists on here to tell us a little bit more about that fish. So they're found in Sierra Leone. And they're only known from the type locality, which is the Kasiwi Forest in Sierra Leone, where it's said to inhabit the upper, I'm messing these names up, Bangbaya River Basin. And the Bangbaya starts with a G, so I don't know how you'd say that. G-B-A-N-G-B-A-I-A. So Bang, probably Gbang.
Don't look at me.
I don't know, Gbangbia. Look at us, Gbangbia in Sierra Leone. So that would be far western Africa. Gorgeous little fish. I'm working on an idea. I would put them in something as small as 7 gallons mm-hmm. with a group of 6 or 8, and I think they would be just fine.
And a little more like elongate than some of the other tiny tetras. They have a different body shape.
Yeah.
One of those, what is that when you see it?
They've got that translucence to them, and the color in their fins make them look kind of like jelly beans.
Mm-hmm. Great choice. My next one is a cheap, commonly available, very weird looking tetra that I never hear people talk about. Notice Borki, the blue tetra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're super active compared to a lot of the tetras. So, like, they're not going to be your dither fish, but they're going to create as much activity in the tank as the average Daniel. But the real headline for them is they are such a bright blue. You have to take a second to think, are these real or not? Gorgeous fish. I don't know why I don't see people talk about them as much.
We don't get them often.
No, nobody asks for them. When we had them, people didn't seem to care. I don't know why. Blue fish are so rare and unique to me that like anytime I see one, I always stop and appreciate them.
We need those.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get some.
I wonder if part of it is they're not going to be like a midwater or top dwelling tetra. They're definitely more of like a lower to the ground. So maybe they're not performing the way people want them to. But a fish that active in a 10 gallon tank is always a fun time.
It makes me think with a fish like that we should be putting them in displays. That, I mean, that was the thing with anytime we had Sunda Daniels in a display, we sold the heck out of Sunda Daniels because it's a fish that needs to color up and be noticed and established before it does its thing.
And with these, I just get the sense that they've kind of fallen out of fashion because I know it was a classic, like, you know, 30 years ago or something like that. So I think that's a fish that needs to come back.
I agree.
Yeah.
Harder water, softer water.
I think this is where we like start to see our different biases because I'm like, you're thinking about breeding them. I'm just thinking about how they're going to display. but Seriously Fish does recommend a softer tank. It says 5.5 to 7.
Okay.
They should keep just fine at a little bit higher. At least they did for us. But apparently breeding is not super common. So I would imagine that that's truly a lower pH fish.
And where are they found?
They're found... It just says broadly Colombia and Brazil.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a big collection area for them not being as common in the hobby as, you know, some of the other fish that we will be talking about tonight.
But they're like pretty cheap. Like this could have gone on our, you know, good deals fish list.
Yeah.
So like, I really think it might just be they're not as desirable for whatever reason. People don't know about them.
Hmm.
Oh. But apparently another site says Peru, so maybe we're really not sure. Wikipedia says Iquitos. Iquitos. I don't know how you're supposed to say that.
Iquitos.
Okay.
Interesting. Cool fish, Charles.
Nanostomus becfordi.
Good call.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fish that I really like because their personality is just so gosh darn enjoyable. I've said it many times and I don't care, but the males display some of the most erratic, like, trying to woo female, like, displays I've ever seen in a fish, and it's just so spectacular to watch. They're so fun.
Can we call it little fish syndrome?
Yeah.
They don't know they're teeny.
The male Beckford's pencil fish definitely do that sparring thing pretty dramatically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to not love them when they're that cool to watch from across the room.
It's like the joy you can get out of a threadfin rainbow, but without all the irritation that comes with keeping threadfin rainbows. They're going to eat anything. They're not going to hurt each other. They're not sensitive.
No, they're great. They're easy fish, and they're pretty sturdy. They can take a punch from like an epistogramma or a palvicogromus. They're solid.
They make a great dither fish for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially because they mostly keep all their shenanigans to the top side of the tank.
They're going to stay nice and small, so I would put those in a 10-gallon easily.
Easily.
Great color, too, on the fins.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when we talked about cardinal tetras, we talked about putting a half a dozen in as being acceptable, but you really don't get the presentation mm-hmm. out of a half a dozen. With these pencils, I think a half a dozen of them looks fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they get the behaviors there. They look cool. I don't know that you'd need a massive group of them, although that might look pretty cool, too.
It might look cool, but I feel like half a dozen is more than fine to get their full behavioral repertoire out of them.
Mm-hmm. So would you do, like, I feel like for this, you could probably do even pairs. I don't even know if you'd want to do like 2 males, 4 females.
Yeah, I think even pairs is fine.
Because you would want them to be able to distract each other more, but I've never seen torn fins out of a Beckford's pencil.
Oh, yeah.
No, I agree. Yeah.
They all randomly spawn in tanks. I've got 3 customers that have, one of them bought 6. And I think he has 11 now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I've never bred a pencil fish. That might be the one to try.
Yeah.
Pencil fish common names are ridiculous. This one's called the golden pencil.
Golden?
Yeah. Hmm. They're all combinations of red and brown, but you'll get golden, coral red, purple.
Right.
Super ultra red.
Although those really are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a pretty dramatic looking fish. Where are these found?
Wow, there's a really specific type locality. A specific plantation on the coast of Demerara, Guyana. Mm-hmm. So, widely distributed throughout the rivers of Guyana, Suriname, and French Guiana, plus the eastern Amazon drainage in Amapá and Pará states, Brazil.
Nice.
Also reported from the Rio Madeira, lower and middle Amazon, as far as upstream as the lower Rio Negro and Rio Orinoco in Venezuela.
Okay. That makes more sense. Because there's not a lot of collection that happens in Guyana, French Guiana, and Suriname, particularly Guyana and French Guiana.
Yeah.
So, when you started off with that, I'm like, oh, really? That's kind of surprising that that's there. But now that Venezuela is, lots of collection happens in Venezuela. So we're good. We're good.
Yeah. Although there's apparently some pretty big differences between like collection locations. So they might be split into multiple species or they have been and then they were combined or something.
Right.
Mm-mm.
This also says, recommends pH 5 to 8, hardness 18 to 268.
In other words, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
pH all the way up to 8.
Yeah.
They Although, must get coastal.
That might be a collection location thing, too. If their distribution is that wide, it might actually matter where you get them from.
Oh, that's a good point.
I mean, the ones we get in definitely spawn in our tap water.
Yeah, they don't care.
So,
yeah. So go for it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, pencil fish are... Every time I see a pencil fish, I'm reminded about how much I like them. It seems like there's a notable tannish as opposed to the silverish of what we think of as a traditional tetra when you go over to the pencils.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still in family Charistidae?
Yeah.
Or are they a Charistidae adjacent?
Nope.
Okay.
Charistinidae.
Charistinidae. Yes. Thank you. I had to talk about a pencil fish as well.
Yeah.
But not that one.
Mm.
I had a hard time deciding which pencil fish to put on my list. And at first I was going to do the hockey stick one, but I think the name hockey stick pencil fish is dumb, so I didn't choose that one.
But you can kind of see it, though.
I can't. That's true. I had to go with my holy grail pencil fish, which is the Espy pencil fish.
Mm.
Not the Equi, the Espy pencil fish. Wait, I got to make sure I said that right. And don't get, because I get them mixed up all the time. I know I did it in front of customers. Yes, I did. The SB pencil fish. They are endemic to the Mazaruni River system in Guyana, which is the reason that we hardly ever see them in the hobby. Guyana is a very challenged country with less than 1 million people in it. And it's pretty poor. It's one of the least densely populated countries in South America, which is saying something considering how some parts of South America are. But it's got a challenging political structure and system. So fish collection doesn't happen very much there. And with this amazing little fish only being found there and not easily bred, they're really difficult to get in the hobby. In fact, I haven't seen them in about 7 years. Have we ever had them here?
We had them here once,
that's right. I have not seen them here since. And considering our wholesaler, I'm kind of surprised. Although we should reach out and say, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not the type of thing that I think that a lot of people are asking for. But it's a fish that, in a group, it really makes an impact.
I think they're stunning.
Yeah.
They've got those four bars on them. And when they line up, their bars are at a little bit of an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And they angle themselves in the water. So those bars end up perfectly vertical, perfectly straight up and down. And so when you see a group of them together, it kind of looks like somebody synthetically drew shadows on them, which is the intent. That's what those bars are supposed to look like.
Yeah. And in an aquarium, it looks sweet. I think in the wild, you wouldn't see them at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That barring distracts from them perfectly. Fantastic little fish. I wish we could get more of them. Other than that, keeping them as typical to pencils, although the water is a little softer for these fish. I don't think they go above a 7.
Yeah, this is 4 to 6.5. Okay, so that's actually a pretty good range.
Yeah, but still only 6.5. So that's one that I think you would want to go with something a little more neutral water on that. Again, something that you could keep in our tap water without hardening stuff. If you want to breed them, do something to lower the pH a little bit.
Yeah, I think we're getting into the bias of if you get this fish, breed them, please.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And if you get this fish, you're probably going to want to do some extra stuff because the last time we had them, I think they were $18 a piece.
Yeah. So and we put them in a tank. We put them in a holding tank we had downstairs. This wasn't where we were set up to really play around with pH in a good way. And they lived fine until they just sort of slowly dwindled. But we never got babies out of them.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
And I think it would be possible to get babies. If we could get our hands on them again, it would be perfect. If I were to do these fish again, I would do an RO system tank. I would do a full soft water tank and just prep it and do it right. It's a fish that's definitely worth that if you can find them. If anybody does find them or has a search for them, let me know. I'd love to get my hands on this fish again. It's an amazing little fish.
Great choice. Good to have a bit of a holy grail on there. I think that might have been one of your holy grails. I don't remember. We can say it was. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, there we go. Somebody will call me up. Nuh-uh.
Well, I was already planning on doing my pencil fish before you started, so I'm going to do mine now.
Oh, good.
This is one, you know, we just talked about the cheap fish and we talked a lot of crap about the other pencil fish, but Rubro caudatus is one of my favorites for sure.
For sure.
This one, the common name for it is the purple. That's a dumb name. It's bright, bright red.
Yeah.
Nanostomus, same genus as the rest of them. This is one, that the like distribution and type locality and stuff like that is a little bit not as well known. From what it seems, based on the Seriously Fish page, I would assume the ones we've been getting are captive bred just because this talks about like the specific commercial shipment they were originally found in and then nothing else.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's all potentially all offspring from that initial.
Theoretically. I mean, that's where they were. The type series was obtained from a commercial shipment of wild fishes from Peru into Germany. And then underneath in habitat, it says unconfirmed.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, I'm not really sure. If anyone has more information on that sounds fascinating and I would like to know about it.
I love it when they do that.
but there is a really great write-up on how to breed them in this section too. They talk about like the time it takes and all of that. It's really fun when you find something like that. But for me, it's always going to be for these, the bright color. They are noticeable from across the room. And unlike some of the other pencils we're talking about, like the Beckfords, they're not going to be as active. They're just going to kind of hang in the midwater most of the time. But you want to see them all the time, and you will.
Another fish I think would make a, or I think does make a great dither for Epistos because they're kind of tough. Like they're
a little beefy.
Yeah, a little beefy.
And if you've got a fancy Episto, you may as well put a fancy pencilfish in there with them. You already spent the money. Spend a little more. It'll look really cool.
Totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. There's the pencils.
Yep. I think we covered the pencils pretty well there.
I think we did.
Yeah.
We went over most of them, actually.
Whoops.
What do you have next?
Phenacogrammus oraniticus. Good Lord.
The lampi.
Lampi Congo tetra. Definitely one of those fish that is on the pricier side as far as a schooling fish goes. But I do think you get a lot of color out of them. They're definitely a soft water fish. So if you're looking to breed, you definitely need to be messing with that. I know some breeding reports I've seen, people are breeding them as low as like 5.5. But they do display like quite a bit of color. And I just think they deserve more attention because of that. It's such a show-stopping fish. And the males in particular will get these like elongated dorsal fins. Mm-hmm. And it just looks so regal. I can't not appreciate them.
This is a fish that to me would like best new fish in the hobby. This might be it. Like it's relatively new to the hobby, or at least it's new availability. 5 years ago, I had never heard of this fish, or maybe only seen a picture or two of it in a book here and there. Now it's something that's kind of readily available to us, and it is just a show-stopping, outstanding holy grail fish.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I actually didn't end up putting any high-end Congo tetras on my list because they're just so unavailable or so available so randomly. This, I think, is the most available of the super cool, weird Congo tetras. At least in our experience.
We're seeing it on a regular basis, for sure.
And if people were willing to buy it, I think we'd always have it.
I think you're right. Yeah. It's a hard sell, but you get that one person who comes in and just says, yep, I got to have it. And then it's just stunning. It's a shocking fish.
Mm-hmm.
University of Michigan fans should love this fish. I mean, it's got that great blue and yellow. That's kind of hard to get. It's got those stripes in just the right places. They're amazing.
Yeah, and that lampi on them is really good.
It really does glow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Congo River System. Do you know which country specifically?
No.
Okay. But yeah, amazing. We tried breeding them. It didn't work. Sometime we'll try again.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually when we say we tried breeding them, sometimes that just means we threw them in a tank to see what would happen. Nothing happened did. This time.
That counts. That tracks, right?
Totally.
Wait, are we on number four or number five?
Four.
Okay. Wait, did we cover that guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, there's a entry on them in the Biotope Aquarium Project site. That's pretty sweet. So check that out.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not one that you have to pay for.
Well, that's good. Which one? We always do alternates. So I'm going with another staple in the hobby. And it's one that we have in a display right now, and we have a ton of them in the display, and I think it makes the display look absolutely amazing. And there's something I just love about red fish. So Hephysobrychon equus, which there's lots of equis, which is horse-like, right? Which I wouldn't call this one horse-like. I don't remember why it was called horse-like, but Hephysobrychon equus, which is the Serpe tetra, I think it's just an amazing little fish. It has what's currently understood as an enormous distribution throughout the Amazon drainage in Brazil, Peru, Bolivia, plus the Rio Paraguay in Brazil and Paraguay and Argentina, the upper part of which is connected to Amazon via the Rio Guapore. So pretty much if it's warm and it's South America, it's there. It is throughout. It's a staple in the hobby for really good reason because they are beautiful, hardy little tetras. Easy to breed, just like the egg scattering method that we talked about with all these other fish. I don't need to look at the pH range on these. It's probably 6.5 to 8 would be my guess, with a temperature range of 70 to 80 because they're found all the way into Argentina.
It says 5 to 7.5.
5 to 7.5.
So you're really close.
Temperature range?
Sorry, I'm going to show my American. It says 20 to 28 degrees Celsius.
20? So that is going down to 72.
No, a little lower than that.
Is it?
Yeah. And then you said 28. That's about...
That's 82, isn't it?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
If you have an aquarium, it'll probably be able to live in it.
Right, exactly. As long as it's not below 70 all the time. Although maybe even then, maybe it should have been in our cool water fish.
I was trying to remember if it was.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think it was in our tub fish.
Tub fish, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. The red on these fish, even when you see them at a big box store, looks pretty good. When you see them in an established Planet Aquarium, it is just a fantastic bright red. Big groups, little groups, they do get a little bit larger. So I think a 15 gallon to get a group of 6 to 8, with more being better. But once you get to the 15 gallon size, stock it up, load it up, and call it good.
Yeah, but I don't think, when I see like 4 of them in a 10 gallon or something like that. I've never seen this fish look unhappy.
No, it's true. It's too hardy for that. Just a great hardy fish. Yeah. So it had to be on the list.
Right. I can't believe I'm going to bring up our first hatchet fish.
Ooh.
My favorite hatchet is Carnegiella strigata, which is the marbled hatchet fish.
That's my favorite too.
Mm-hmm. It's little, it's got a great pattern, and one that's settled in actually does get a really nice blue iridescence to it. They're always going to hang out at the top. I think they're the hardiest hatchets in my experience anyway. Great tiny fish. 10 gallon, totally fine for a little group. Hatchets are great because like they're always going to take up a spot in the tank that nothing else does. So,
absolutely.
Great for filling in that sort of top area, especially in some of the aquascapes. I've seen some really high-end aquascapes that look perfect with marble hatchets in them.
That makes sense. I think it's one of those fish that, you know, I get a little tired of seeing like 10 different kinds of tetras in the same tank, right? I think that just, it doesn't make for a cohesive presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do 3 different kind of tetras, like if you did lemon tetras, serpe tetras, and then hatchet fish, I think that would work fantastically.
Oh yeah, that would look great.
It can kind of accent anything because like you said, they're going to be at the surface. They're pretty much never going to be in the middle of the tank.
Yeah, I'm not even sure they can.
No, probably, they might not. They are capable of actual flight.
Yeah.
So keep the tank very well covered.
Yeah, if we're going to say they're great for aquascapes, not a lot of them if you've got a rimless tank.
Not good for rimless at all. They will jump out of a tank like that. Surprising how far a fish like that can get.
They're found like everywhere in South America. The range from Seriously Fish says Amazonian Bolivia, Brazil, Peru, and Colombia, plus the Rio Orinoco system in Venezuela and some coastal drainages in Guyana and Suriname. But this may be open to question. So
then if it's in coastal drainages, that means it probably also has a pH range of probably 6.5 to 7.5?
It says 4 to 7.
4 to 7?
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
I've never seen anybody have any issue with them in our water or have them look great. What about breeding, though? I think this is one that's not very easily bred. They've got to be an egg scatterer because they're not going to go deposit them in leaves, but...
This says unrecorded.
Unrecorded.
Yeah, that's all it says.
For such a common fish in the hobby, for unrecorded breeding, that's kind of amazing. Makes me want to try it.
Really? Yeah, it makes me want to fail at it, too.
I know, right? There's got to be lots of people out there that know more about breeding fish than me that have tried it and failed.
Yeah, now I want to do some more research.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's widespread. So if they're all wild caught, that's probably fairly sustainable too.
Probably is. Maybe it's like cardinal tetras that maybe they're... No, if they're in drainage systems, they're not... If they're in lower parts of the river, they're not going to be seasonal because those parts aren't going to dry up.
Hmm.
Maybe they still could be.
I don't know. Great little fish.
Yep.
I think inch to inch and a half most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They, because of their habitat and where they hang out in the water column, I do think it's a tank that you want a little bit more surface area for them. I don't know that I would put them in a 10 gallon. they probably would be fine. I wouldn't go smaller than a 10 gallon.
No, but definitely
go up to a
15 not.
Or 20 long would be a little better.
The only reason I say 10 is because they're not very active, but I see what you're saying where, you know, the rest of the tank doesn't mean anything to them. If you did like a 15 column, that would be worthless. But, you know, a 12 gallon long, fine.
Or even like if it was like 3 gallons only. I would have to do the math.
Like 2 inches tall. 2 inches deep.
3 gallons of water would probably be absolutely fine for this fish.
Be a great paludarium fish.
It would, as long as they...
As long as it's one of the tall paludariums where they can't just jump out onto the land.
Yeah, and there's not ledges they can land on. Yeah, these are cool fish.
All right, what's your last one, Charles?
Exodon paradoxus.
I knew you were going to bring them up.
Yeah.
The poor man's piranha.
No, these are better than piranhas. Piranhas kind of suck. I love piranhas.
I love piranhas. I almost put red belly piranha
but
on my
not
list.
Badass. No. This fish is actually kind of horrifying. I've never been afraid to put my hand in a tank full of piranhas. I get iffy when there's one of these in the tank because they are fast. They are definitely a bite first, ask questions later, and they definitely have teeth. And I think this is a fish that's really underrated because I think this is the most accessible predatory fish in the hobby. And I think that means that it should be far more popular because it gets like 4.5 inches. And so I think like a 15 gallon, 20 gallon is all you need for one. And you get all that hyper predatory behavior out of something in a little package. Very easy to take care of, very hardy. They come from like more neutral waters in the wild. So I think their typical range is 6.5 to 7.5 pH and like mid 70s, give or take. So they're really like easy. They're like smack dab in the middle of what most people are keeping. And you can, you know, get them on all sorts of frozen flake, live guppies if you're breeding them yourself, like whatever you want. Like they're fine with anything. And I just think that ease of being able to switch hit what you're doing based on what you want to do for them, that's great.
If well fed, they tend to leave their own species alone.
Mm-hmm.
If well fed. They get hungry enough and you'll see, and you'll know right away, you'll start to see some missing tails on some of the other ones. And if you see that, you're probably going to need to separate them.
Oh yeah.
But keeping them as a small group is not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, piranhas kill each other because we're usually comparatively keeping them in these teeny, teeny, tiny tanks. So like a fish that small, I don't know, a decent sized tank provides tons of hiding spaces. They can get away from each other even if they do get a little snippy.
This might be one of the few fish that I would specifically set up a 55 for.
That would be really fun.
Yeah, which by the way, that is probably my absolute least favorite size aquarium. But this might be one of the reasons where a 55 would be quite an appropriate tank for it. It's got a little bit more height than than a 40.
Yeah. And just, it's got that length where they can really zoom if they want to.
Yeah. Long enough that their hyperactivity can, you know, wear off after about 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just a cool fish.
We're all just like so... We cringe when we hear someone say they have a 55 because of how many crappy Mbuna and reef tanks we've seen in them.
Right.
There are other ways you can use them, but too many. Right. Too many.
It's a really difficult tank size to aquascape.
Yeah.
And that's really, really why I'm not a fan of that one. It's too narrow front to back with too much height. So it's hard to take advantage of all 55 gallons because of the extra height issue in there.
Yeah, and forget creating a sense of scale. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Just truck some big driftwood pieces in there and that's the best you can do.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you guys brought up piranhas because my final fish is a piranha-like fish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Catapryon mento, which is the wimple piranha.
Mm-hmm. Is it not a real piranha?
It is not.
Interesting.
No, it is a piranha adjacent. It has a specific description. They call it, where's the name for it? Not actually piranha in ichthyological terms, being a monotypic genus. But they changed it. The genus, piranha are fish specifically in that genus. And this fish is Cataprion, not, I can't remember what the genus now is for what prana is now. Mento refers to chin, which is definitely a reference to their very dramatic lower jaw. And that lower jaw is set up and specifically designed to lip scales off of other fish. They are specifically a scale eater.
It's pretty metal.
Right, it is. part of the reason I appreciate this fish so much is I first saw them at the National Aquarium in Baltimore. And they had this giant display full of flagtail tetras, which is Procolotus. I can't remember what the species is. But this is a tinfoil barb sized tetra. They actually fill kind of the same niche as tinfoil barbs in Southeast Asia. This is a tetra that's going to reach close to 8 inches in length. And they have these really nice, big, large scales. So the display they had at the National Aquarium in Baltimore had about 100 to 150 flagtail Procolotus, flagtail tetras, and then 3 wimple piranhas. And it was a big enough population that they actually managed the prey-predator ratio in an aquarium. So the wimple piranhas could, every once in a while, just go up and bloop, you'd see them. Like all of the flagtail tetras had 2 or 3 missing scales. And that was it.
Wow.
And that was enough.
That's so hard to pull off.
I know, right? I tried this fish years ago, and someday I'll try it again if I can figure out how to get them off of scales and onto something else. But I kept, when I first got these fish, the one I got them in, they were not in the greatest of condition. And I know that was part of the problem. It was 25 years ago when I got them. I put them in a 29-gallon Planet Aquarium, and they seemed okay, but they were sketchy as heck. They just wanted to hide. They were really, really timid. You know, typical piranha-like fish.
Right.
I tried all kinds of things feeding these fish, and finally I gave in and I put a couple of goldfish in there. Sorry for those faint of heart. And I watched the goldfish swim around, and I watched the piranhas. They'd like peek out and then dart back into the hole, and nothing happened. The next morning I woke up and I looked, and still nothing happened. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. So then I went off to work, and I got home from work, and I went down and I looked, and all 3 goldfish looked like they had been scaled by a chef.
Yeesh.
They were still alive and swimming around.
Like a corn cob.
Yes. Completely, completely scaled.
Wow.
And fine.
Wow.
It was odd. I did that for a little while, and then you know what happens when you feed diseased fish to your own prized fish. That happened with my Lumpa piranhas. But someday I want to try something to keep this fish again. According to the experts on the internet, and this is seriously fish, so it's one that I trust, it's unlikely that you're going to successfully keep a group of them together. And it kind of makes sense considering their lifestyle. They're going to live intermingled with schools of much larger fish. So like that school of flagtail Procolotus, that's probably a typical relationship that these fish are going to have. If you do get them adapted, according to Seriously Fish, a single fish should do fine and should adapt fine to aquarium life and be okay. And not be, you know, like some fish just don't do well in this as a group.
Mm-hmm.
These should not fall into that category. But they're just kind of an amazing, unique fish. They're one of the thinnest fish I have ever seen.
Ooh.
Like when you see a 5-inch wimple piranha head on, it's going to be like a 1/2 inch wide.
Cool.
Just super narrow. Super unique.
So they're like wimpy discus.
Yeah, kind of. I wouldn't even say they're thinner than a discus.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Super unique looking. Shiny, shiny silver, like mirror silver body. And that's so that they can hide themselves amongst schools of other fish without being scary.
That's awesome.
They want to reflect the other fish around them.
Yeah, I think cartoons have caused a lot of poor piranhas to have some really rough lives. Everybody thinks about that, like, horde school of piranhas all together just attacking stuff.
Like the James Bond movie.
Yeah, and that's just not how it works. That's not what they do.
No. Piranhas actually get that reputation because as the Amazon River system recedes and you get this concentration of piranhas in small pools, that's when, yes, they can actually debone a cow in a short amount of time, right? Because they're a whole big group of very starved fish.
Yeah. Then it's worth it to die for your meal if you have to.
Exactly, yes. But regularly you'll see images of small children swimming in quote-unquote piranha-infested waters. And you'll see video of people swimming down next to piranhas and the piranhas darting away from those kicking feet.
Because those kicking feet can kill them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I put the Wimple Piranha on my list because it's such a specialized, unique fish.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, now that we're kind of at honorable mentions, I almost put red bellies on my list.
Did you?
But it's just because I have such intense affection for them. And I realize I don't actually like red belly piranhas. I like an ancient single red belly piranha that's been kept as a pet for years. Because those are really fun.
They are.
Piranha tank, eh. Piranha pet, they're really fun.
They are. Most piranha, most people that want piranhas, eh. I had mine for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I knew a guy that had one for 27 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just don't tend to do very well in a group unless you've got just so much room. Ridiculous amount of room.
Right. But, and ridiculous amounts of food.
Yeah.
Like you have to keep them very, very well fed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have an alternate?
I have one alternate left, and that was the lemon tetra.
Yeah.
Like that. That's a phenomenal little fish.
Classic for a reason. Like for me, it's Serpes, lemons, and orange flames. Those are like the three.
Yeah, for sure.
Just tetras to start with.
Yep. And I think everything we said about the Serpe tetra, other than the word red, you can say about the lemon tetra. Yeah. I guess I don't know if their range is quite as broad or their temperature range is quite as broad or their pH level is quite as broad, but they're just as hardy and just as easy in quote unquote normal tropical aquarium conditions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a big group of those with Serpe tetras, or even standalone, I think is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I had to put Takano tetras as an alternate.
Oh, yeah.
And I almost, like when I had that moment of which one should I do, I almost did Takano tetra instead of Serpe tetras. Because they're so aptly named. Mm-hmm. They're tetras that look like toucan beaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the flashiest tiny tetra, I think. Other than maybe like there's a nice glass tetra that's small that has like really bright orange fins. But I mean, that red cheek and the stripe.
Oh, yeah.
That's really nice.
To get the colors to really come out on this fish, you do have to mess with the water. We've had ours do fine in our tap water, but the colors are just not quite as vibrant. Get that pH down and get that hardness way down, and those things are just going to glow.
Yeah, a little bit of tannin. Mm-hmm. That's going to make them look real nice.
Yep. Those are good.
I had the green fire.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good underrated tetra with some really nice contrast. And that emerald green color is pretty uncommon too. Ruby tetra. Just another good tiny one. And the blueberry tetra, which we haven't had for a while.
Oh, yeah. Forgot that guy.
A lot like the lapis, but with like a really good purplish blue body instead of the kind of goldy one. Bright red fins.
My other alternate you guys all took.
It's so funny because it's such a huge group of fish.
This is true. Maybe we've been hanging around each other too long.
That's what I was thinking. I guess that just means we're going to have to wait and see what other people say. Maybe a different three people would have all completely different ones.
Yeah, it's true. I want to hear about what some other people say or some of their favorite tetras, and go onto our podcast listener page and read the amazing description of why I can't remember what this person's name was. And I apologize for that. But why, how detailed this person went in about why they like black skirt tetra so much. And give me something like that about some tetra that you have that we didn't talk about today.
I would love to see some more of that. That sort of like passion for someone's favorite fish. That's what the hobby's all about.
I agree.
Because like we did that whole episode about dumb fish and each one of those is somebody's favorite.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group on Facebook. It's been a great time. I love everyone who's participated in there, and we've been having some really good discussions going on, including that. So please post your favorite Karrisons so that we can critique them and tell you you're wrong.
Yeah, because that's what we do around here.
We're always looking for submissions for podcast listeners, questions, episodes. So if you have any questions for us, email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com and we may answer them on the air. Or if you have questions like, you know, advice or something like that, you're always welcome to send us a message on Facebook or an email or whatever, and we'll happily take a look too. Anything else? Go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com and take a look at what we've got up there right now.
Join. The plants that we have on there are amazing.
Yeah, and it's more and more every week. We've got a ton of stuff growing. I listed as soon as we have extras, and as soon as we don't, it's not going to be on there anymore. So we're hovering somewhere around 50 plants on average right now.
I'm actually going to give a little shout out to Amy because of how amazing the plant growth has been around watercolors lately. And that's all Amy around here. So good job, Amy. They look
Thank
great.
Thank you. I've been having a blast with it.
Sweet.
Yeah. More and more stuff every day.
Very cool. This is a good list, guys. Yeah. Let's have lots of fun. Thank you so much for listening and keep those hands wet.